The opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of Impro Mafia. Meaning, if you've got a problem, email Dan, not Wade.
Impro Mafia presents And Time!
Welcome to And Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's resident tech guy and designer.
And I'm Stephen Youngblood.
Stephen, you are from the Wellington Impro Troupe.
Is that it?
Over in New Zealand. So, at what point is your organisation at? I mean, how long has WIT been around?
Well, it's been going together for about 5 years now, 5 or 6 years. And basically we're a community Impro Troupe, which means we're taking improv to the community. We run classes, workshops, we do shows at all levels, junior shows, which we call, we've got junior classes, level one and two.
Yeah.
And then we have a core, which is our main group of people in the troupe, and they have shows. Then we have our intermediate players, and then our ensemble, which are our...
That is a well-tiered system.
It is a well-tiered
system. So two different levels of rookie.
Technically, it's three different levels in WIT, and level one and two classes are outside of WIT, but we bring them in once.
Okay. Level one and two. So level one and two classes, but they're level one and two shows?
They tend to be. It's like graduation.
Okay,
shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. But oh, okay. For the most part, the shows that WIT does are about WIT, not about the little ones and twos.
Oh, okay, yeah. Nice. How do you, beginner shows go? Do you tend to have, like, professional organisers in there, and then are they professional?
They tend to be friends and family shows. They tend to be friends and family shows with the little ones and twos who sort of, they get up and show off what they can do. So we're talking about word at a time. We're talking about he said, she said. So we're talking about the gamey games that you learn when you first start improv. Before you're working towards the more auspicious and exciting stuff.
Nah, so you feel like you've started to leave the games behind a little bit?
Once you're out of level one and two, when you're in the group, we start to focus on less on games, more on scenes.
Nice.
Games teach us the rules of improv, how to improvise. There is a tendency to sort of treat them as performance items in themselves. If you can take what the games teach you and how the structures from the games and translate them into real life, or into scenes, then you can do so much more, so many more doors open for you, because you're not bound by the confines of a scene, of the rules of a game. So, for instance, the no S games or anything like that, or three word sentences, those games teach you to really get outside of your head and just improvise and act and create. And three word sentences, for instance, gets you out of just talking a scene and to doing a scene. You're acting, because you've only got... It's not about being clever with three words. It's about, okay, maybe it's not all about talking. It's treating things like that. And that's the philosophy of WIT. We're playful, fun, creative, all that sort of stuff. But we're about scenes.
All right, I'm going to have to find something for us to disagree on, because if I just sit here nodding and saying, that's exactly how I feel, it's going to be very dull. Maybe I should just start. You know what?
Well, I'm a New South Wales supporter. How's that work?
Backwards scene, I think, is the penultimate impro.
Yeah,
there's no better impro than a backwards scene. That's...
You know,
long form drama, backward scene, that's where it's at.
You did well to find something to disagree with me on.
Hooray!
Yes! I love backward scenes. I don't think it's good improv.
No, okay.
Yeah. I think it shows that you're clever, it shows that you can do all this sort of stuff, but it's all about showing what you can do.
No, you see, I would...
And backward scenes, as you said, how you describe it, is the ultimate form of improv. And for me, that says, yeah, look, I can do this. This is me. I'm showing everyone out there that I'm an improviser. And look, I'm clever because I picked a question that came after what you said, but before you said, so you have to think about it backwards and look at me. I'm like, aren't I doing well? Great. Okay, there are shows for that. There are purposes for that, each to their own. Backwards scene has its purposes as well, but it's not something that I'd put in my repertoire for a regular sort of ultimate improv. When I think of something that's ultimate improv, I think something that's genuinely affective with an A, not an E there. You leave feeling, wow, that was great. You didn't have to laugh, you just had to be affected or changed somehow. There's people in the scenes had to be changed.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you again. I prefer when the audience leaves feeling moderately disappointed with the show.
Yeah,
but just as long as I personally have shone, I think that's the important.
Yeah, well, I think if anyone's going to shine, it'll be you, to be honest. So I'm looking forward to that.
Tone.
Wow. 2 hours sleep. No, seriously. Okay. No, that's fine. And you need to have that sort of attitude in some of the shows, I think. So it works well. The shows that I prefer, the things that I prefer to be in and do and watch, are the ones that...
The good ones.
Focus on story and character changing. Well... Not good. The ones I prefer to watch. Yeah. So we can talk about good scenes, bad scenes, but every scene has its pluses. Every scene has its downsides. Not often you see a scene that was just bad. It was just bad. You don't see that very often. And if you do, then they've learned something, hopefully. Otherwise, they've missed the point.
Mm. All right, well, I'll stop baiting you with things that I clearly don't believe myself.
Oh, you don't believe them. Right, okay. Now what do I do? Nine.
You want to discuss getting offers and gets from the audience.
Oh, well, I think it's a pet peeve of mine. It's a issue.
Probably. I know that when I started,
yeah.
I remember the teacher, Kirsten, told me that there are no bad offers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure I agree with that.
What, when you go on stage, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Interviewer. Dano, what do you get up on stage and ask the audience for? What do you tend to get up there and do?
Well, I tell you what I won't get up there and do, just ask them for a common kitchen utensil, unless I am desperate for the offer of a spatula.
We get egg better in Wellington.
If you're lucky, a whisk, yeah.
Yeah.
What I can do is go up there and ask them for some sort of offer that they already know the answer to. What is something that is currently under your house? What's something that you're saving for?
Yeah.
Where is a place where's the furthest place away from right here that you've ever visited?
Okay.
And that way, it doesn't freak out the audience. It doesn't make them feel like they need to be clever to answer it.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing that can happen in one of those situations is go, what's the location? And then someone calls out something funny, and then it's only downhill from there.
Well, and that's right, because it's... And those are reasonably... You know, I would say that those are reasonably strong ask for. If you go to the audience for an ask for... And I would even suggest you don't always need to do that.
In fact,
I would say maybe not even half the time, but we'll see. If you go to the audience for an ask for, you don't want the ask for to be the scene. A lot of people, for instance, we use the classic spatula scene. You know, you go there, people think spatula, the scene's all about the spatula. It doesn't need to be about the spatula. It inspires the scene. The scene may well involve a spatula at some point. It could be the theme of baking and cookery and mixed folding, turmoil, life change, I don't know, but... Giving ask fors are one thing, using them are another thing altogether. And how you use them, that's a skill that I think is something that we, as improvisers, don't spend enough time focusing on. But the quality of the scenes you can get is amazing if you pick the right kind of ask for. One of my favourite ones that I've just adopted, and I'll probably end up using it in one of the shows. you can just listen to this again.
Why
not? Posterity and all that. I like, it's a breaking a little theatre rule, but I like asking people what the last text message they received was.
Oh, that's good.
And you filter out the ones saying, I'll meet you at the show at 8. Although you can do that, of course, but sometimes you get really interesting ones. I remember one I had, and it said, where are you? I don't know where you've been. I don't know if you know if you even care anymore. And all you have to do with that was just go, right. Now we know what this person, we have no idea what this person's thinking, Ben, but I'm going to show you. So we did. We did a scene about that, and then that was a brilliant, fun, moving, effective scene. And it wasn't just someone waiting to be heard from. It showed the gamut. And I think that's something that has a lot of scope. You know, the open ask fors, the open offers that you can get. So, you know, not just what did you want to be when you grew up, or can I have a non-geographic location, please? Hate that. Because think of something else. If you want a place, think, can I have a place you might take somewhere for a picnic? Can I actually be better? But it's a non-geographic location. Then you go and get examples, and then it's all...
Can you give GPS coordinates of a location on this planet where this scene can take place?
That could work. I don't know. Get a little laptop and Google Earth. Go, okay.
Older.
Oh, hey. We're in Azerbaijan. I'm feeling lucky, Azerbaijan. Oh, that's about that. Let's do a scene about that.
Unfortunately, a third of your scenes would be, we're in the middle of the Pacific. Again.
Yeah, that would go a bit stale quite quickly. We wouldn't use that ask for too often. But no, I prefer the open ask for. But so what? My question to you now. What, since you have admitted to me as much that you don't really think that backward scenes are the ultimate form of improv.
Yeah.
What is your favourite kind of scene?
Oh, my favourite scene. I'm very fond of mime scenes and scenes that involve a lot of conveying a lot of story without talking about it.
All the physicality of the story.
Yeah, I'm very fond of that sort of stuff. And also scenes that involve endowing other people's motivations and such. Sort of a scene where one person can speak gibberish and everyone else knows what they're saying, And so whenever they say anything, what they've just said is in doubt upon them by what their response is. I'm quite fascinated by that sort of interplay.
Okay.
But no, mine is a delight.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Mm. And I enjoy song too, but that's because I'm good at it and it's easy, you know, I think.
Sure, easy. Songs. Love them. They
don't
kiss him
tonight.
I'm a bit and anxious about this comedy sports thing, having never done it, but I hear it should be a piece of cake to pick up, so I'm hoping it'll be fine.
Oh, so you're in the international grudge tonight?
I'm the Kiwi accent.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes.
That makes it international.
It really does. I was hoping to go to town tonight between now and the show and try and find a cheap New South Wales jersey. you know, because, hey, why not get the Brisbaneites on my side? But couldn't find anything that was below 120 bucks, so I've bought a little few things, something from home instead.
Yeah.
But yeah. Comedy sports.
Comedy sports. Oh, yes. I don't think there's any problems there. You've played games before.
Is it, so it's a game-based format?
It's game-based.
Okay.
Two teams. We play games each round, staggered. And there's sort of that bickering between the two teams.
Okay, a little bit of heat. Cool.
A bit of heat. But, of course, you'll want to be ready on stage, just in case the other... four people are dying. Then you can jump up and rescue
them. So the crossovers are okay. Right. Okay. So crossovers are okay and encouraged.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good to know. Good to know. Okay. Cool. I think my sort of favourite types of scenes also involve some sorts of genres. I'm a huge fan, and this goes back to something I said earlier, but a huge fan of the darker sort of scenes, the noirs.
So where do you start your noirs?
Where do I start my noirs? Not always in an office with a detective at the desk. No. They don't even need to be a detective story. Because noir is a genre. It's not just a detective agency. You can have that. You can have a same spade.
Noir PIs.
Well, yeah, good. Sure. That's a whole genre.
When you need something from Malta found, come to us.
That's exactly right. I know where I'm headed after this. But no, noir is... It's not all self-narration. It's not all detectives. But I don't know what it is. It's got elements of so many fun things. It's dark. Anti-heroes. You've got betrayal. You've got revenge. There's always a double cross. You've got
What do you think of the narrative element of the noir story?
I love it.
You're fond of it?
Yeah, massively.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a really good way of telling a story that... Especially for shape of show.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got a show that's focusing on getting the funnies, the ha-has, you know, if you've got a whole bunch of games, okay, look at us doing, we ask for the whole scene of questions only and just freaking each other out by asking the same question in different ways. And then you go and do something that's just, whoa, what? You know, throw the audience off guard. That what just happened there? I love that. I love that effect. Being able to just go and bend them to your will.
So you like to unsettle massive groups of people?
Yeah.
I can get on board with that.
Yeah. It's not something I set out to do. Sometimes it's just, you go, no, I want to do this. And I think I'm, you know, we'll just see what happens. Because you don't go in thinking, tonight I'm going to do a scene where this happens and this, because you can't. We all know that. But I'm going to be very conscious on the shape of the show and of all the shows that I'm in, which is two, trying to make sure that what I do fits the show or complements the show rather than just fits and adds to the layers and the depths and the complexities, and that's my goal for the festival.
Oh well, it's my goal to make sure that there's a very specifically Stephen shaped hole for you to fill in those shows.
There usually is, but it's usually in a wall somewhere. Yeah, cool.
Just when someone asks you to do a singing game.
No, I can do singing games. I don't mind them. I'm not very good. I don't mind.
And time. But not end time, because we'll be moving on to another interview with more exciting people from the Off the Cuff Festival. You've been listening to Stephen Youngblood. He's from the Wellington Impro Troupe, which is wit.org.nz.
We're back the second half, or third half, depending on how I edit it, with Liam Amore. Welcome, Liam.
Thank you, Dan Beester.
Now, you're from Impro Melbourne predominantly?
Yep.
So that's your allegiance?
Yes. I've been working with Impro Melbourne for about 10 years. Before it was Impro Melbourne, it was a Theatre Sports Melbourne, but we had to change it.
Ah, right.
Mm.
Excellent. And you've been doing it for a while now.
I've been improvising for about 17 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an impressive track record.
Thank you very much.
And when did you get good?
I'm still yet to see that crowning day. I don't know.
You could probably back off that mic just a tad.
Just a little bit. Okay, how about
that's fine. My voice, that's a bit more comfortable.
I found that my journey through improvisation is like a, it's one of those weird things where you go, yeah, I'm doing this, I'm really, this is great, what is this new thing called improv, I love it, and then you go, yeah, I know all about it, and then you kind of get bored and you hit a wall. And what happened with me was I got really cocky and thought I knew everything about it and how to milk everything for laughs, and then we had a guy called Keith Johnston come out and give a workshop, and I had to throw everything I knew, well, I thought I knew about improv out the window and start again, which was great, you know, and try again to do it the right way. And we did, and then I've been teaching and performing and doing it that way. So it's like a series of epiphanies, you know. You go, just when you think you've got a handle on it, it's suddenly something will change, you go, oh, I have to start again.
It's too friggin' dynamic.
It is.
Like when you play squash, you get good at squash, and then you're good at squash.
That's it.
They keep changing the rules on us in improv. Ridiculous.
Well, that's actually the good thing, though, because, I mean, squash, yeah, you play it and you get bored of it or get bored of getting hit in the nuts. But with improvisation...
Oh, I never get bored of getting hit in the nuts.
It's good comedy. with improvisation, you know, it's just as soon as you've sort of got into short-form games, which is what I started doing, at least I love playing theatre sports games,
mm-hmm.
and then as I started sort of reading as much as I could about improvisation, and then I started getting the stuff from the States about Del Close and long-form improvisation, and then we had a few teachers come out from America and from England who were dabbling in long-form, and we played a bit with that, and then we started devising our own stuff too, so that was like... That opened a few doors as well, so it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, so once you realise that you're allowed to make up the whole structure...
You mean I can make it up?
Aside from just the content, you're
That's
like,
right.
Oh, well, it's... And then you have a whole bunch of things that fail, and it's wonderful.
It is interesting, though, because I've also found the more I improvise, I don't know, to a certain degree, I've become a bit of a lazy actor. Because I also trained as an actor. Now I find it's almost a chore to learn lines and blocking and stuff. I much prefer the spontaneity and the sort of instant gratification of improvisation.
Mm. And not only are you entertaining the audience, but you tend to be entertaining yourself.
Exactly.
You leave stage and go, wow, I didn't know that I could do that. I'm pretty funny.
I love those moments. But I've also, more recently, sadly discovered, I've written a list of the stock standard things I do when I improvise.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
You've got a list. We're all quite young here in Brisbane, so we've only got like our one thing that we do when we panic.
Put on an accent or smoke a cigarette.
Or I go through a liquor cabinet.
Yeah, they're all on the list.
That's one.
And why is every Western scene starts with a squeaky door, you know, as you come through. Every film noir scene starts at a detective's office. And
just what I was discussing with Stephen not 5 minutes
there you
ago.
Go. And every psychiatrist is German. So there you go.
That we haven't.
Yeah,
that's
no, as soon as you get into an office, it's like, so, tell me about your family. Yeah.
No one's good enough at German accents to but I think I'm going to start practicing, because I can see where that could come in useful the first 6 or 7 times.
So now I'm trying to flip it every time I find myself doing that stuff. So whenever I find myself doing that sort of stuff, I want to try and up the ante and find something new to do.
Yeah.
So I constantly kind of push myself as well.
Mm. I know that Wade always smokes a cigarette when he panics.
Yeah, but he can't smoke.
I do like to dig.
He fists an ashtray every time.
He does. I always find that if I've got nothing to do, I just start digging a hole.
Yeah, good.
Because there's something.
It's a metaphor. Hole.
Yeah, well.
I'm just digging myself a
the
hole.
The answer's here somewhere.
But coming back to the idea of pushing the kind of boundaries of improvisation, one of the things we're doing for the festival, which is Mr. Fish, is because I love comedy improv.
Yep.
And I, you know, I'm the first one there to ham it up and gag and all that sort of stuff, which is bad, obviously. But with Mr. Fish, while it's still it's humorous and there's moments of there's some great jokes in there, it's very much a different style of improvising because we're trying to tell three or four stories. And completely immerse it into a genre or a feel or an atmosphere, and it's fantastic.
I have no idea what to expect.
No, good.
Which is excellent. Now, what I wanted to chat to you especially about was something you touched on before, was how your improvisation affects your acting jobs, because you are a moderately accomplished actor.
Why, thank you, Dan Beeston. Yeah, I've been lucky.
I know that you're at the point where you're getting shot in detective stories, but not yet shooting other people in detective stories.
No.
So obviously that's a big...
I either get dumb dads, dumb crooks, or truck drivers. It's because of my sideburns. It's funny because a lot of people ask me, like, how much does your improvisation help with you getting work? And I say it helps me all the time, because anytime I go into an audition, and I've always used my impro skills, because, you know, the one thing that you can count on is that whoever is casting it will always say, okay, do it this way, Now let's imagine you're lying on a beach somewhere, or, you know, just to see whether the act is malleable or not. And so if you're an improviser, of course, it's second nature. You go, okay, well, just do it like this. Say yes and keep going.
That's good.
Which is great.
I actually tried out for a sitcom pilot, and I've never done any acting before in my life, so I had to learn two pages of stuff. And I hate learning lines. Right. I suck at it. That's why I love impro so much.
Yeah.
People go, oh, I can't believe you get up there and make it up on the spot. I'm like, I can't believe people get up there and not make it up on the spot.
I can't believe you spend a month learning those lines.
Just to forget them on the night. And so I went into the thing and I practiced all the movements, and I had particular gestures for each beat of how I was going to say it. I knew everything down to the last microscopic detail. And of course I went in to do it and they said, oh no, that was great. Now could... The thing is, the character's not like that. He's more like this. Could you do it like that? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I can. And then proceeded to have to read pretty much every line off the script in front of me.
Yeah.
I did the next bit.
Body memory.
And it was perfect. So, yeah.
Did you get the role?
Hey?
Did you get the role?
No, but I was in the top five.
Hey, there you go.
I was pretty pleased with that, because if I got the role, I'd have to, like, actually film a pilot for free. So,
film the pilot for free trick.
Quite frankly, I don't think is going to get picked up. It's very good. Like, the writer is really, really quite talented, especially for someone so young.
Hey, Dan, you haven't got the role. You don't need to.
But, well, he might be offering me another one.
Really? He sounds fascinating.
The fucker who wrote it is really talented, but he's still a fucker. But
portions of this interview will be edited for editorial reasons.
The only editing I've done for that sort of content is editing out the names of people that we're bad-mouthing.
Great.
And, of course, the word
cunt. Yeah, sure.
So
that'll be gone.
So I prefer not to use language that I wouldn't use on stage, and try to keep my grandmother from finding it.
I've used impro in acting for stage and on TV.
Yeah.
And I find that sometimes it works against the other actors, especially if they don't have any improvisation background. You've got to be very careful when you use it, because, you know, while on one hand you think you're keeping it fresh by adding in a line or a new piece of movement or something, it can completely throw off your other actors if they're not ready for it. So I've learned to sort of find a halfway point.
I know of a friend of mine who does acting, and he's like, fucking improvisers. They never say the same line twice. How am I supposed to keep up with that? I have the line. Why don't they sit down, learn the bloody line, and we can do the play that's written in the book that the playwright wrote. They're not the playwright. Oh, God. And then I delicately leave the room.
To improvise somewhere else.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
So what do you do? I'm web design.
Yeah, that's right, every time.
Now, the biggest claim to fame so far as the Brisbane Improvisers are concerned is that you were in McAuliffe.
Yes.
Doing stuff there. Yes. How did that come about?
That's funny, isn't it? Because that was, it's almost 5 years ago, more now. But it's almost, somebody, I teach at uni and somebody, I keep still having people come up to me and go, you were in that McAuliffe show. You were wearing sideburns and a moustache. And that was the big thing on the show, was to see how much facial hair we could put on and get away with in front of Ted Emery, the director. I remember turning up for one, it was a church scene, Bob Franklin was in it, and he was handing out wafers. And I turned up, it wasn't a line or anything, we just had to stand in a line. Jason Geary and I are there, and I'm standing in a line, Ted Emery comes along, and he looks up at me, and I've got my hair parted to one side and a little Hitler moustache on and a suit. And he just takes one look and he says, get the fuck out. Get out. I had to take it off. Came back.
Got in trouble.
Yeah, but it was always thinking, how much hair can we put on in each scene? But McAuliffe was great for me personally, because it was the first time that I saw how a TV show is put together.
Ah, okay.
And it was originally, Jason and I were asked to go on that show. It was
Jason does impro with you, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he's coming up as well. He'll be here for the festival.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So is he from Sydney then?
No, Jason Geary is an Impro Melbourne performer.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, why is he not here yet?
He has got a corporate gig today, so he had to come up late, yeah.
He's getting paid to do impro?
I know. That's crazier things have happened. But Jason and I were asked to be on the show as a kind of precursor to another show that we were going to do, which we were going to write for and do some bit parts for. And Ted Emery said, come along and be in the McAuliffe show to see how it works.
Yeah.
So we were naive and young and full of beans, and we were kind of like let loose on the set. It was great. So we played all the bit parts. And what I very quickly learned was what not to do as far as, you know,
facial hair.
facial hair. But also, you know, keep out of the way of the lighting guy. You know, don't ask them stupid questions like, should that shadow be there? And things like that.
Oh.
And also...
Do you know how to do your job? Because I don't, but I think I do.
Hey, I've got an opinion. But more so, how TV comedy works, because, of course, up to that point, we'd been improvising a lot and doing a lot of big sketch comedy. We just come out of the Raw finals, and we were doing big sketch comedy stuff. And, of course, the first time we did a sketch, I did it completely over the top and hammy. And it was the first... Well, I'll never forget it, because it was the first day of the first season, first day shooting of the first season, the first sketch. So there was a lot of pressure on Ted and the crew and Sean, and because it was the first time they'd all worked together.
Uh-huh.
And so... And I was
so
the
you
first...
you were the weak link.
...fucking bunny to come in and fuck it up. Sorry, there's a lot of F's there. And I just remember it distinctly because Ted came over to me very earnestly and said, no, not like that, like this. And he said, play it straight. Play, if you're going to do TV comedy, play it straight down the line.
Oh, well, you look at things like the Comedy Sale.
Yeah, exactly.
Where, I mean, there was that like, stage in the mid-80s where some very talented individuals managed to create the comedy company with these over-the-top characters.
Yeah.
But the only... Occasionally, people seem to try again on a commercial network to capture that magic, and you're like, no, that only worked in the mid-80s.
It's weird, isn't it? Because it's a fine line. Either the whole show is over the top and it's taken at that value, but a show like McAuliffe, which was very much played, is in that kind of same way the Marx Brothers are played, in that you put a surreal element into a real environment. So for Sean to walk into an environment, you had to have that environment as real as possible. So we played everything straight down the line. And then the kind of the comedy came out of that.
Yeah.
And it was great. And so I worked on the first two seasons of that. And then I got a job with this huge company called Scape, which was Village Roadshow and Channel 10.
Yeah.
This is just before the internet busted. And and it was too big and I couldn't do the third season. But I had a few bits and pieces here and there with Sean doing that. But that was it was a fantastic time of my life.
Mm.
It was really good, yeah.
And then, of course, you got to catch up with Sean again occasionally in Thank God You're Here.
Thank God You're Here, yeah. We did one or two things together. And
as you were one of the ensemble.
I was, guest ensemble in the second season mainly. And that was, again, I've got to be careful what I say here. It was an interesting opportunity because for an improviser, because on one hand, we were allowed to improvise to a certain degree, but we always had to keep coming back to the script.
Yeah.
So it's in a weird way, it was quite frustrating. But it made sense for TV because they have to, with the TV...
Everything has to work.
They have to hit the camera spots, they have to hit the right markers.
Oh, okay.
And it's all based off the script.
So they don't get in, like, sports camera guys. It's got to come across as, like, a scene work.
Rebecca Unamuno is big thing is that, you know, she says you've got to have sports cameramen who can capture everything. Unfortunately, due to the studio setup, because everything was going off the script, you kind of were bound by the script.
Yeah.
So that's why you get a lot of that frustrated kind of... blocking, but that still happens.
Yeah, and frustrated improvisers. All these lay people going, oh my God, this celebrity is so talented. And all these improvisers sitting there going, why won't they let these people improvise?
But that's also the glory of the show, though. Yeah. You know? And they're very smart because they got guests on, some of who could really improvise,
yeah,
and some of whom were like rabbits in headlights. And I think the audience got a kick out of seeing both sides of the fence.
Because a number of the regulars on there actually work with Impro Melbourne a fair bit, do they?
No, most of them are Sydney. So
oh, really?
Nikki Parry and Dan.
Well, Nikki's ensemble.
Nikki was ensemble, yeah. And Dan Cordeaux was ensemble, and he's Sydney.
But Peter Rosethorn has done a lot of
A lot of the guests, the improvisers.
Yeah, that's what
I... Yeah, sorry, yeah. Yes, yeah, Pete's done some stuff. Glenn Robbins, who produced the show, obviously, was one of the earlier sort of stars of theatre sports in Melbourne. He did
a lot
of work.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah, he's a big theatre sports fan. And he used to play a lot, I mean.
Was he ever on screen in any of the episodes?
I think he did one. Yeah, he did one or two guest spots.
Oh, okay.
So, again, it was an interesting... I'm hoping they're going to do another series. We'll see. They're doing Hollow Man at the moment.
Yeah, they tend to just go out on high points, don't they?
Yeah.
I remember.
Well, they know when to leave it.
Yeah, so. I remember being crushed when The Late Show finished.
Yeah.
Just crushed.
It was mandatory viewing, wasn't it?
And then Frontline came along and I'm always forgiven.
Well, Hollow Man's a bit like Frontline in that same style that they've got.
Yeah, there. I haven't caught it yet.
I did episode 6. I'll be on episode 6 for
Are you dead body?
No, I'm the opposite. I'm the other
dumb dad?
No, other side of the fence. I'm a federal police officer.
Grumpy cop.
Yeah, grumpy cop. So that's good.
That'll be great.
Yeah, it'll be good fun.
Oh, I have to set my brain to remember to watch it because I just don't have the technology to record.
You can set your brain? Brilliant.
Yeah, I can't figure out the timer, though. And time! This has been another section of our special off-the-cuff presentation. You've been listening to Liam Amore. Liam is a very big man down at Improv.
Hey, what's the weight comments there? Oh, I'm sorry.
He's a very fat man from impromelbourne.com.au. Feel free to check out their website and get ready for the next part, unless no one else agrees to interview with me, and then it'll just be the end.
That has been the first part of the Off the Cuff Festival special.
Now, what happened then? Okay, cool. So this one's working. It's all good.
It's all good. Look at that. All you need to do is clap. It responds to positive reinforcement.
Just like improvisers.
Just like improvisers.